Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we do not have Paul Venable today. And what I want to do is I want to continue moving forward. We've got a lot of content to cover this year, folks, because this is a, I'll just say, a foundational year where I've gone through a lot of content over the years, and sometimes we focus on one thing or another. But what I think is the most important is covering all the material so that you will have access to these documents, because I know most people are way too busy to just sit down and actually go, oh, let me read the Articles of Association. Let me read these things. More and more people are caught in commutes as those in the land of the living have to struggle to get into their place of business or place of work and struggling through, we will just call the flow of life, because traffic isn't getting any better. And that's by design, by the way. The reason traffic is absolutely abysmal, as a matter of fact, when I grew up in the Seattle area, they made major improvements in the throughput of traffic in the 1970s. And as I go back to the Seattle area, they still have that same width. I mean, there's some areas that they developed, but they developed those to inject what we call toll lanes, as they have, you know, toll roads and what do they call them, turnpikes on the East Coast. On the West Coast, they deliberately hampered and constrained traffic, and they realized, well, you know, there's a lot of affluent people that live in this area that travel to this in this direction and so forth. So what they did was they created these fast tracks, and they did this in LA, Seattle, and most of the larger population centers on the West Coast, not only LA, but San Diego and so forth. So as we look at, why are they doing this? And as a matter of fact, here's something that nobody has made the connection to. Here is a private entity. Now, let's be clear here. There have been government dollars that created these freeway systems. In other words, your tax dollars, or actually maybe your parents' tax dollars, actually went through and did the initial clearing of the land. And as they cleared the land, they created these highways or freeways or what have you. But nevertheless, the tax dollars created that thoroughfare. Now, all of a sudden, a private company comes along and says, we want to kind of benefit, and we're going to kind of create a lane, and we're going to pay for it. And you're going to pay us to operate. But this land itself, in other words, it's almost like the government is leasing the land that they paid for clearing. This company is not paying the cost of the clearing. This company, and as a matter of fact, how is it even possible that government can actually allow a private entity to come in and sell? It's almost like going into a government building and finding, you know, private enterprise selling you all sorts of stuff that is government stuff. In other words, we got these artifacts and the government made them, but we're going to sell them for a profit. That can't be done. The government, when they do those things, in the old days when there was stuff on a Marine base or a Navy base or any military base, when they were refurnishing the barracks, all of the furniture was sold at an auction, or they would have it off, you know, where you'd pay pennies on the dollar from a government surplus. And in other words, they weren't supposed to make money. And these roadways were not for profit. When government creates a system, it is not to be for profit. And yet they are doing this. But back to your commute. So as you're struggling and by design, they're not allowing you to get to work in a very efficient manner. They're deliberately stifling you so that they can start separating and dividing. They are dividing us in so many different ways. It is pathetic. But government's job is not to stifle production. It is to try to make sure that as many obstacles that are in the way to allow you to travel is moved so that you can get from point A to point B as most efficiently, so you can function the most efficaciously as possible. Imagine that. Imagine government making it so that you can actually get from work back and forth without government having to pay for it. Now, we have road systems and so forth that allow that to happen. But what's the matter with, you know, creating craft that will actually, you know, fly over the freeways or what? There's all sorts of ways and discussions that we should actually be talking about in getting government more and more out of our knickers. Let me ask you this. Is the Department of Transportation constitutional? How many state constitutions actually have it included? Because, you know, how did we live in the 19th century, in the 1800s? How did you get back and forth to work? Well, you had a horse, or you know, traveling and carrying stuff, you had a wagon and horses. And how did the government create those roadways? No, you did, because it was based on necessity. Government came along and started doing some of that stuff to help promote and to help allow you to, you know, have better thoroughfare in your towns and so forth. So they kind of created these streets and so forth. It's okay for you, the people, at your local level to choose what is best. But it's not okay for government at the top level to start deciding, well, we don't want you to be as productive as you are. Go look up traffic calming, quote unquote, traffic calming. This is a UN World Forum, Economic Forum. These are concepts that they're inflicting upon the world, where they're putting in more and more roundabouts. And more people go, well, these are nice. Roundabouts are, no, they're not. First off, they're very, very costly. Secondly, they hinder permanently traffic. In other words, if that's a thoroughfare, you typically go 60, 70 miles an hour through that, and they put a roundabout, you have to slow down, and then you have to navigate through this thing, and then speed up again. And or you may stop and yield or what have you. But bottom line, you're better off having lights than you are a roundabout. Nevertheless, I wasn't really planning on going down this rat hole. I usually are always driven by these passions and these thoughts. But bottom line, what we're trying to do with this content is we're trying to make sure that for you on your commute, or for you when you have your time, if you want to understand what was actually in these documents and understand the paradigm, I will tell you the Articles of Association are very eye-opening. As a matter of fact, Paul has basically said, wow, I am absolutely stunned that they talked about slavery in this and their position on it, that the Southern states were involved in this and their position on slavery was antithetical to what was going on in the Constitution. Now, why is that? Well, all of a sudden things started getting good. I mean, we were no longer being threatened. We were no longer being manipulated by a pretty evil monarch. And we can go into, you know, some of these things if you want to. Just give me the idea. Let me know via feedback. If you want us to go into that early, I'll just say, insurgency, that Britain brought in guns and basically created an attempted coup or a rebellion of the slaves. And I forget what state it was in, but it was mentioned in the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson that Britain was behind that. In other words, they're pitting us. They were deliberately pitting us against each other. folks, the fact that we have any racial animosity today goes all the way back to what Britain was doing in pitting us against each other. In other words, let's stop giving them the satisfaction of controlling us, and let's start uniting on these fundamental principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. I cannot imagine why anybody would think it's a good idea for government to tell you what you have to eat tonight. Think about all the decisions you have to make, what to wear, all of these types of things. When government has that level of control, they will control it, because that's what it's all about. Now, in this content, we're going to move forward with the Articles of Confederation. We're right now in Article 9, and I'm going to pick it up in how many paragraphs is this? It's like 6-7 paragraphs now. And so this starts off with the United States in Congress assembled. And we kind of read this, but I'm going to reread this again. And what is really critical is how they're describing the roles, responsibilities, powers, the jurisdiction of this federal government, or because it was a federal government. I mean, they had delegated powers. This general government, and it was really more apt when they talked about the federal government back in those days. It wasn't really a federal government, so they didn't really call it one, because a federal government alludes to this concept of a federation. A federation is where the states have delegated most all of the power to the federation, and the states are really administrative subservience to the federation, which is kind of what they had in Rome, where the Senate basically had all the power, and they ended up giving all that power to Caesar. But nevertheless, let's just move forward with the United States in Congress assembled have authority to appoint a committee to sit in the recess of Congress to be dominated. A committee of the states is what they're calling it, and to consist of one delegate from each state, and to appoint such other committees and civil officers as may be necessary for managing the general affairs of the United States under their direction. Now, the general affairs were really just for the purpose of trade and the purpose of national security, you know, guarding us from threats. Okay? To appoint one of their members to preside, provided that no person be allowed to serve in the office of president more than 1 year in any term of 3 years. In other words, you got 1 year shot. I mean, John Hancock was a president of the Continental Congress and a committee of that at one point in time. To ascertain the necessary sums of money to be raised for the service of the United States, and to appropriate and apply the same for defraying the public expenses, to borrow money or emit bills on the credit of the United States, transmitting every half year to the respective states an account of the sums of money so borrowed or emitted, to build and equip a navy, to agree. So that's one of the things that was in the Articles of Confederation, to build and equip a navy. Why? Because the majority of all of our threats had to come via water. I mean, there obviously was some threats in Florida with the Spaniards, and to the north with the British and some French and so forth. But at this point in time, we were really, really close buddies with the French. I mean, really close. To agree upon the number of land forces and to make requisitions from each state for its quota in proportion to the number of white inhabitants in such state, which requisition shall be binding, and thereupon the legislature of each state shall appoint the regimental officers, raise the men and cloth, arm and equip them in a solid like manner at the expense of the United States, and officers and men so clothed and armed and equipped shall march to the place appointed, and within the time agreed on by the United States of Congress assembled. But if the United States in Congress assembled shall, on consideration of circumstances, judge proper that any state should not raise men or should raise a smaller number men than the quota thereof, such extra number shall be raised officered, clothed, and armed, and equipped by the same manner as the quota of each state, unless the legislature of such states shall judge that such extra number cannot be safely spread out in the same, in which they shall raise officer, clothe, arm, and equip as much as such extra number as they judge can be safely spared. Now, obviously, the states are really taking it upon themselves, or actually keeping this general government from actually being able to dictate. In other words, it's up to the state legislature to determine. In other words, who has the real control over how many officers and members of the militia will be federalized? It wasn't left to the general government. In other words, the general government was literally hanging out there to dry, hoping that the states would see the urgencies. And, you know, so in other words, the onus was at this point in time on the Continental Congress to help justify and sell this idea. Please give us these guys. You know, and this is what we need. And it'll be up to that state legislature to judge. And this was one of the major problems, because remember, this was written in 1777. And as they were prosecuting the war, there were many states that started to judge, well, we're not going to give that much. And it was so important to Washington to be able to grow and have the continuity and so forth. And the states were basically saying, no, we're not going to do this. Where Washington actually created this, you know, the winter quarters to maintain the continuity. And what they ended up doing was hardening and strengthening, again, this little Continental Army that the states were starving. At this point in time, the states were starving this Revolutionary War effort. And those men who said, you know, I'm in this for the long haul, I'm in this to win. And those men that were committed, I mean, they went through some hardships that are just, I mean, Hollywood, I think, I've never seen a really good job done of, you know, this Revolutionary War. And the spirit, or the humility that these men were facing. As a matter of fact, some of these things, I would just love to see somebody really do justice to, you know, the crossing of the Delaware, where they went back in on Christmas Eve and basically handed the Hessians their butts. These German mercenaries who, I forget the town that they were in, but nevertheless, when they crossed over, names elude me, but when they crossed over, they went in at the point in time where the Hessians weren't even expecting them, because they were drunk and disorderly, and many of them were passed out. I mean, they took that town without a fight. They captured these men hardly without a fight. And what a huge victory that was. What a bolstering of the spirit of Washington and those men that were with him at that point in time. I mean, this was really a ragtag army. And so, again, it was a federalized army. So moving on. Unless the legislature of such state shall judge that such extra number cannot be safely spread in the same, as I read, which case they shall raise officer, clothe, and equip as many as such extra number as they judge can be safely spared. And the officers and men so clothed, armed, and equipped shall march to the place appointed and within the time agreed on by the United States in Congress assembled. In other words, oh, well, you know, whatever you're going to do, you're going to at least show up on time. The Articles of Confederation is so pathetic. And interestingly enough, as I look at many people that I've dealt with the sovereign citizen movement, or some patriotic movements out there that are casting doubt upon the Constitution, there is no strength. There was no solidity in the Articles of Confederation. And when you really look at, you know, this concept of a magistrate doctrine, the doctrine where supposedly you have this almighty magistrate. Sorry, folks. As a matter of fact, going back to that would be far more dangerous, because over time, had they started assuming powers, because even though this was pretty specific, you still had a single body. The lack of checks and balances and those concepts, just in the legislature itself, just in the Continental Congress, having nothing but apportionment of equality, regardless of whether it was, you know, bicameral or not, it was of equal vote. In other words, each state got one vote. They voted by delegation, almost kind of like the Senate. And what would have ended up happening was that all you needed was enough corruption to get in there and start. They could have done the exact same thing had they actually, you know, given themselves the currency and the ability to print money. They could have easily used money back then to start corrupting the states and getting the states to go along, which is exactly what Hamilton started doing. And that's how Hamilton basically put this nation on a course of corruption. Anyway, so the next paragraph, the United States and Congress assembled shall never engage in war nor grant letters of marque or reprisals in time of peace, nor enter into any treaties or alliances, nor coin money, nor regulate the value thereof, nor ascertain the sums and expenses necessary for the defense and welfare of the United States, or any of them, nor emit bills, nor borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor appropriate money. I mean, excuse the expression, but this is where they're castrating them. They're not giving them the ability to do anything. If you listen to this, they can't emit money. They can't control it. You know, they can't even sum up the expenses necessary for the defense and welfare. As they go on, nor agree upon the number of vessels of war to be built or to be purchased. Or, I mean, they say in one hand, or to build and establish a navy and to build it. Or the number of land forces or sea forces to be raised, or appoint a commander-in-chief of the army or navy unless 9 states assent to the same. In other words, they had to get approval with everything that they were doing on these necessary things. Nor shall a question on any other part except for a journey from day to day be determined unless the votes of the majority of the United States in Congress assembled. And so we got 1 minute. I'll try to get this last paragraph in before we get to Article 10. The Congress of the United States shall have power to adjourn at any time within the year and to any place within the United States, so that no period of adjournment for any longer duration than the space of 6 months, and shall publish the journal of their proceedings monthly, except such part thereof relating to treaties, alliances, or military operations as in their judgment require secrecy, and the yeas and nays of the delegates of each state on any question shall be entered on the journal when it is desired by any delegates of a state, or any of them, at his or their request, shall be furnished with a transcript of the said journal, except such parts as are above exempted, to lay before the legislatures of the several states. Now, I will go on and say that when we look at, you know, this, what the concept of secrecy is, why is it? Because there's no reason why a state legislature can't receive national level clearances. As a matter of fact, I think it is necessary. I think that, you know, they thought that, oh, well, they'll keep it small, keep it all. Well, that's how we actually have a CIA operation that is actually conducting operations against us. So when we really look at how the problem was, we were all convinced to go down this, you know, this little centralized little nugget of power. But when it comes to national secrets, we got to break this. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so clearly, when we looked at the jurisdiction, the Continental Congress didn't have a court. Continental Congress had to kind of create a, as a middle ground, they had to create the court arena. In other words, if there were contests or what have you between states, I mean, in some respects, it was kind of a joke. And when we really look at their dependency, you know, their, I could just see how they couldn't ever resolve justice between corrupt states. In other words, I think the states held so much power back. It becomes obvious, you know, where Madison, in trying to create a solution, went a little bit overboard with the Virginia plan in trying to give the federal government way too much power. As a matter of fact, you know, when you look at organizational growth and development, when you start off and you realize you just didn't do things right. And so 9 times out of 10, the first thing that an organization really wants to do or tries to do is to overcome their shortfalls by overcompensating. And so we saw that they just didn't have enough energy. They had zero control, where Madison proposed a plan that would have full and, you know, overwhelming control, where they would have actually had probably general powers. Now, doesn't mean that they wouldn't have created an enumerated constitution, that they would have lent to that. But Madison, in his mind, was looking at creating a very powerful centralized government, that the states became administrative objects for that central government. You have to be very thankful that the brilliance of James Madison wasn't one that was like Alexander Hamilton, where he was malicious and or maniacal in trying to ensure and inject a path forward down this, you know, search for a better government, a better constitution, that he didn't have this pride of authorship. This is one of the things that absolutely amazed me about James Madison. Folks, when you sit down and you craft a plan, you craft an idea, and there's merit. I've actually considered, I'm going to talk to Paul, I honestly think that we really should look at the 4, 5, 6 plans that were presented so that everybody understands how those plans were presented and what they were really going to do. Because I think it's, you know, there's a saying, you really can't, you know, appreciate, you know, the good times without actually having to go through hard times. In other words, it's like bitter and sweet, right? How can you appreciate the sweet, you know, nectars and those things that are, you know, just really a delight to experience if you've never tasted bitter? So in other words, when we look at, and this kind of goes down to, you know, the fundamentals of I think our Creator's plan for us. There has to be positive and negative in our lives. There had to be good and evil. We had to have evil. And Satan was more than willing and welcomed the idea of accommodating Lucifer. When we really look, though, you know, it is only through this struggle between positive and negative, good and evil, that we are able to truly grow and obtain wisdom. And it's interesting, when we really look at, you know, the lifespan of a human and what we're capable of ascertaining, as well as, you know, placing, you know, clear, you know, I'll just say unbiased context. In other words, a lot of times we see things and we know people like, you know, the Archie Bunkers, where, you know, they're so baked in their bias that they're just incapable of putting aside their views. Now, Archie was probably right on very specific stereotypes, but maybe he didn't understand the context of the stereotype to kind of understand that in a general sense, 98% of the time, this is, you know, it's this way. Or, you know, this is the 98% or 90% or whatever the percentage is, a high percentage that this is going to happen or that this is a problem and so forth. And so we get into, you know, these biases. And one of the things I've kind of learned is the older you get, you know, that old adage, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, that's not true. It depends on the dog. But 99% of the time, most people become so baked in their beliefs and their ideas that they can't, you know, see things, you know, in any other form. Now, most people think that, you know, I'm one of those old dogs, but I'm telling you that I'm constantly, and as a matter of fact, there's a confidential person in my life that, you know, I work with, and I'm constantly being challenged to look at things differently. And it's not that I'm not willing to do that. What really boils it down is not that I'm not willing to be objective and look at those types of things and whether, you know, I'm right in, you know, my bias or what. What's really important, what I believe is what I'm offering, is the truth of what we have as a government. There are all sorts of things out there that, you know, lend to the, you know, this conspiracy, lend to, you know, how we got into this mess. And it's not that those things aren't important. The solution is far more important than understanding the every nuance of the problem. And, you know, the details, how we got there, why did this all happen? By design. As a matter of fact, you know, the Bible was able to, and the prophets were able to see things that, you know, as John the Revelator reveals of the last days, Daniel and so forth. I mean, they were given insights that very few people had. Even to this day, nobody knows the time except for him and the host of heaven. So, as we kind of look at, you know, what I'm really trying to do here, it's not that I want to be not objective. My head is down and I'm focused on every step that we take to walk through these documents, to get through this content, so that you have access, because these things are getting posted, folks. This is all going up to the Reclaiming the Republic podcast page, the RSTR, Red State Talk Radio podcasts. So if you go to Reclaiming the Republic, you can get every single one of these and download these. I mean, it's almost like having an audio book right there on your shelf when you download the Articles of Confederation. You're hearing Paul and myself, or just me, or you know, whomever. I think Eric had assisted in last year, and I think it was the Assumption Act or around that time frame. And so as we kind of look at these documents, this is a library, an audio library of what these documents actually say, so that you can actually have access to hearing. And then I try to editorialize to help you understand what it is you just heard. Because sometimes if you're not reading it, and this is why we also post these documents, make sure you download these. And as a matter of fact, I try to make a habit of every document that we post, we actually put the link to where you can find this document at an academic website or what have you. This way, you can actually read the document along with us. And so it's critical. It's really critical that we all really start understanding what these documents said and what they were really doing. Why? Why is it critical that we all understand this? Well, there's this old premise I live by. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So getting you equally informed is critical, because then we can start agreeing on what it is we need to do, which is why this whole year, I'm starting this whole year off with, what are the different courses and different paths? And I'm going through these documents, kind of exposing these paths. We started off with the Sovereign Citizen Movement. We're still doing that, as well as we're going to refute the Convention of States, and we're refuting what the anti-Convention of States people are telling you with nullification. And, we don't want to do this. No. There's a very specific thing we need to do, and they're not telling you that. And that's not even on the table, because they don't want you to know. When the real solution surfaces, and this is not GR's real solution, this is Thomas Jefferson and James Madison's real solution. And when those people out there want to lie and tell you single state nullification is the way to go, then I'm just telling you that is controlled opposition, and you're being manipulated. You're being manipulated into believing that is a legitimate course. As I have, and we will break this down, nullification at no point in time ever solves the problem. Zero. A convention actually could solve the problem if the Constitution was the problem. But what we are dealing with today has nothing to do with problems of the Constitution. It has everything to do with our public servants behaving outside the scope of what the Constitution has directed and delegated them to do. In other words, all of the debt, all of these things that we're telling you, and as a matter of fact, this the close friend, confidant, the person I'm becoming very good friends with, realizes that I need to harangue on some very specific messaging, like that debt. How many times do I have to say this? Because most people don't hear this. People will listen. They'll listen for a little while, and then we get disconnected because they're streaming. They've reached their destination in their car. I mean, how many times have you listened to the entire show of Rush Limbaugh? This 3 hours. You hear him, over the first hour, maybe, in your commute. And so people hear them in these little, 20-minute, 30-minute, one-hour commutes. I don't have a three-hour dissertation. What I have is an hour to give you content. And so we don't go through and repeat these things that debt, our debt, that debt clock is all fraudulent. All of the money that you see on that debt clock has basically most of all that, and what the federal government is spending of legitimate money that they're pulling in from you, the taxpayers, a good percentage of that is all fraudulently being spent. They are defrauding us and spending, with no disrespect towards sailors, like drunken sailors. They're spending this money so recklessly, which is why many people say, well, that debt is, our greatest national concern. The facade is our greatest national concern. And so we're going to prove this. And we go through all these documents, and we do prove this. You can't refute this. When we get into the ratification debates, you will understand how that Constitution was defined. And when you start understanding how it was defined, it will help you understand why lawyers and judges who don't know how it was defined think they can actually interpret. They don't even have the authority to interpret. That's not a power given to the judiciary. The power of interpreting or determining those terms and conditions lies only with the parties. They are the final arbiters and judges of what that Constitution truly means. But nobody wanted anybody to understand that. Back in those days, like Hamilton and Marshall and those people in the Supreme Court's early days, they wanted more power. And so they wanted you to believe that they could interpret, and they have been doing it ever since. They've been legislating ever since. They've been doing things that actually any person with a moral conscience, when you start realizing what you've been doing as you've been a participant in this wheel of fraud as it's slowly turning along. I mean, there's this, I believe any person with moral character would feel shame and say, you know what, we've got to stop this. We absolutely need to stop this immediately. And there's a way to do that. And that process is what we call today, what Jefferson and Madison did, Republic Review. They never fully implemented it. So we challenge you to understand these things. But let's go through where we kind of left off. So Article 10, the Committee of States or any nine of them shall be authorized to execute in the recess of Congress such powers of Congress as the states in Congress assembled by the consent of nine states shall from time to time think expedient to vest them with, provided that no power be delegated to the said committee for the exercise of which by the Articles of Confederation the voice of the nine states of Congress of the United States assembled shall be requisite. Now, here's kind of an interesting thing. When they actually created the Constitutional Convention and this Constitution, how many states did they need for ratification? Nine, right? And inside this, they created a three-fourths rule. But here, right here in Article 10, because you hear these people say, oh, well, they changed this whole concept that, you know, you had to have 100%. In amending and what have you. Well, actually, it's saying that if you have nine in assembly, the problem was they couldn't get them. They were so divided, they couldn't ever get to a point where they had nine in assembly. So, it's not that some of this stuff didn't necessarily exist. The problem was, is the corruption in the state. The states were truly the bad players. And that was one of the things that the Federalists, I think, did an excellent job in proving how these cabals in the states deliberately, you know, devalued their currency, did all sorts of shenanigans that made it impossible for this union to succeed. And the only way that we could move forward was through this divine constitution. Article 11, Canada acceding to this confederation and adjoining in the measures of the United States shall be admitted into and entitled to the advantages of this union. But no other colony shall be admitted into the same unless such admission be agreed by nine states. So baked within this Articles of Confederation, they did actually allow nine states to allow certain things to happen. Most people thought, well, it had to be unanimous. Yes, when it came down to the amendment process, yes, that's true. And so all bills of credit, emitted monies borrowed, and debts created by or under the authority of Congress before the Assembly of the United States in pursuance to the present Confederation shall be deemed and considered as a charge against the United States for payment and satisfaction whereof the said United States and the public faith are hereby solemnly pledged. And this was something that the states absolutely ignored. And as a matter of fact, they just didn't care. they stopped funding the United States. And as a matter of fact, those guys that were trying to get their war debt paid, you know, they were having a problem. They even had a problem under the U.S. Congress, under the U.S. Constitution, because it took a while for the federal treasury to finally get to a point where they could start paying those debts. They had to first start having successful requisitions of tax as basically apportioned out to the states. And once that actually started happening, and once they finally moved to a U.S. currency and moved to coin, then we became a little bit more financially stable. Ah, but Hamilton wasn't done with that. This is why he wanted to create a bank, and he wanted to create a ledger that he could actually start manipulating our economy and our currency. And that right there was not constitutional. Now, Article 13, here's the final article. Every state shall abide by the determination of the United States in Congress assembled on questions which by this confederation are submitted to them. And the Articles of Confederation shall be inviolably observed. In other words, you know, obediently observed. I mean, faithfully obedient, whatever, you know, a better word for that. Let me see here. Faithfully obedient, we'll just leave it at that. Observed by every state. And the Union shall be perpetual, nor shall it. Now, this is right here, the amendment process. Nor shall any alteration at any time hereafter be made in any of them unless such alteration be agreed to in a Congress of the United States and be afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state. So this right here basically started dividing them, because Rhode Island, even though we had most all the states, I think in many cases they had 12 states who agreed to an amendment, but Rhode Island decided not to allow the amendment to pass. They were obstinate. They were problematic. And whereas it hath pleased the great governor of the world, the creator, to incline the hearts of the legislatures we respectively represent in Congress to approve of and to authorize us to ratify the said Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union. Now, this was done in 1777. It wasn't ratified until 81. But regardless, folks, I mean, look how long it took for them to ratify. And, well, they were fighting a war at that point in time. You would have thunk that they would have, you would have thunk that they would have gone down this path of ratifying it rather quickly. I mean, the states weren't threatened at all by this. As a matter of fact, the states weren't relinquishing hardly anything to this general government called the Continental Congress. Why did it take so long? And yet when the Constitution came along, it was ratified practically within a year. Within a year, it was ratified. Right? 1787, September 17th. It was sent to Congress. It didn't actually get out and start getting debate until like October, November timeframe in Pennsylvania. And by July timeframe, New York, we had basically at that point in time, I think we had, 11 states. Yeah, Virginia was the 10th and New York was the 11th. The two states that failed to ratify, that were not in the Union or represented, was North Carolina and Rhode Island. Rhode Island stayed out for another year. Now, as we move on, let me see here. Know ye that we, the undersigned delegates, by virtue of the power and the authority to us given for that purpose, do by these presents in the name and in behalf of respective constituents fully and entirely ratify and confirm each and every of the said articles of Confederation and the Perpetual Union, and all and singular the matters and things therein contained, And we do further solemnly plight and engage the faith of our respective constituents that they shall abide by the determinations of the United States and Congress assembled on all questions which by the said Confederation are submitted to them, and the articles thereof shall be inviolably observed by the states we respectively represent, and that the Union shall be perpetual, in witness whereof we have hereunto set our hands in Congress, done in Philadelphia, in the state of Pennsylvania, the ninth day of July, the year of our Lord, 1778. And, but actually they say agreed by Congress, November 15th, 1777, in force ratification, March 1st, 1781. So yeah, it was 1781, not 83. But by 81, they'd already got two amendments, I believe, two or three amendments were already being pounded out before it was even ratified. Before it was even ratified, they had identified that many discrepancies. And then they started realizing, well, there are other problems. But, I mean, before they even really started operating as a Continental Congress under the Articles of Confederation, they, you know, identified problems and things that they really needed to fix. So they started having conventions. And what we're going to do is when we come back next week, because tomorrow's Feedback Friday, when we come back next week, Paul and I will start exposing you to the basically the byproducts of these conventions that will then expose you to the Continental Congress's guidance, because bottom line, there'll be a couple of conventions. I believe there's two. The Annapolis one was the final one that said we have to have a convention to rewrite or to create a new constitution. And so that goes to Continental Congress. So we're going to read these documents. And as a matter of fact, if you want to know where you can find these in the Federalist Papers, I believe it's Federalist Paper 40 or 41. I think it's 41. And if you, because why? Because Madison was, his honor was being, his reputation was being sullied by the Anti-Federalists saying you had no authority, you went down this path and you shouldn't have done these things. And so he actually cites in the Federalist Papers word for word verbatim of what these documents actually said and says we absolutely had, you know, the authority to do what we did. He says, you know, in a way we kind of meandered a little bit, but they actually created and submitted to the states a methodology and a government that was far superior. And they were within their scope of doing that. And we're going to prove all of this to you. This way we can actually lay waste to these little bickering positions that are being played out in front of your legislators in these committees where the Convention of States are making these wild assertions that the Constitution is the problem and the anti-conventionites are out there saying, oh, no, we can't do this. And, you know, that first was a runaway. They lie in saying that. It was not a runaway convention. Just understand, look up the definition of runaway. They did not abandon their post. They did not abandon their responsibility. They marched forward in doing what was necessary in preserving the Union. And basically, they had the help of the divine hand of providence. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.